Okay, here we go. I'm sorry. Last time we talked about three areas. We talked about gifts. We talked about liens. We talked about bailments. Gifts are a very important area of property law. Because in addition to selling something, if you want to transfer the rights that you have in the property, you can also give it away. And remember, what is the most important element of a gift? It's indispensable.
No consideration.
Well, yeah, well, what are the three elements of a gift? Think away an item.
I wasn't here last week.
Okay.
Seriality.
Anybody? Hold on. Intent.
Delivery.
Acceptance. Very good. And I am. She's your lovely aunt. She makes cookies. I had a book. I had an aunt in. Every time I walk her, she lived to be 106. Pretty good. I don't know if I hit half that. And Anna, every time I walk through the door, she hands me something she did. Okay? She always said, and she went out of the door. And Ida likes to give things away. Intent, delivery, acceptance. Two types of gifts. You have gift inter vivos, gift while you're alive, gift causa mortis. Thinking of death. And what are the two special elements for a gift causa mortis? A, you got to think you're going to die. You have to satisfy the elements of IDA, just like a gift causa mortis, just like a gift in a body. You got to think you're going to die, and you got to die. Okay? So, not only do you have to do the IDA, but you also have to die and think you're going to die. Now, do you have to die of what you think you're going to die of? No! So you could die of something different. So if you think you're going to die because your doctor tells you you're going to die of cancer, and you get hit by a beer truck, guess what? You still have a valid gift causa mortis. Okay? Don't have to die of what you're afraid to die of, you can die of something different. I'm pretty morbid in there. Sorry. That's gifts. Liens. Liens are simple things. They're security interests to compel somebody to repay it. So if I take out a loan to buy a car, the financing entity will put a lien on my car to make sure that I pay the loan back. If I don't pay it back, what can they do? Repossess the car. So they pay the security interest where they get to take the car if you don't pay off the loan. Two types of liens. 90% of liens are what we call special liens. Those are liens on one particular item, like the car loan. You can only pay for the car. You can't pay for what's in the car. So if somebody's got a diamond ring in the car, then you have to give that back. You only get to take the car. Okay? A general lien is only given to a very few select entities, like common carriers, taxi cabs, or buses, or airplanes, or hotels, or warehouses. With a general lien, you get to take everything that that person leaves in your car, your bus, your hotel room. Why do they do that? Because unlike a special lien, where you can say, are you credit worthy? I'm not going to lend you that money. With a common carrier or a hotel, they gotta take anybody off the street. They cannot refuse you. They cannot do a credit check on you. So as a result of that, because of the fact that they have to take anybody who walks through the door, the law gives them more of a lien on all property. A general lien is not given to somebody who salutes in the Air Force or the Army. It is of all the property. A special lien is only for that one item. Okay. Lastly, a bailment. A bailment, think of the concept DAPR. That's the acronym that we use to remember the elements. A bailment is where I provide you with personal property. It cannot be real property. It's got to be personal property. For a purpose, I ask you to keep it safe. I ask you to hold it for me. I deliver this to you, and you have to deliver it back to me. It's got to be ended with the deliverer. You have to agree to it. Okay? It's a contractual basis. You always, always, always have to get it back, and you have to agree to it. Okay? All right.
Tonight, as I said, we're going to kick off with intellectual property. It's one of the most dynamic and important areas of property law. And it's all based on rights. Because unlike a car or a house, you don't get to physically have it. There is no physical rendering. It's all ideas. And you can represent it on a piece of paper. You can write the code for a computer program. You can write the story like a novel. But the patent, trademark, and copyright is just the idea of the thing. And as a result of that, this is also, interestingly enough, the only area of property law that relates to federal law. It's in the Constitution, and it has been since 1788. Okay? Intellectual property law is in the vestige, not of the state, but of the federal government. Okay? Three areas, patents, trademarks, and copyrights, and we'll get to what they are. As we said, not all property is tangible. That means we can't hold it in our hand. We can't stand on it like real property. We can't hug it like our puppy. It is not all tangible. Intellectual property is an idea. That's why we have our first postulate. Property is a collection of rights, not things. If you had property only being a thing, you couldn't have intellectual property. An intellectual property, more than anything else in the law, is what really elevated the United States of America to be one of the greatest economic powers of all time. Because when you work for your labor, whether it be as a patent, with an idea, creativity, if you came up with a copyright, or your thoughts of a trademark, you got to get paid for that. And you could prevent other people from taking your idea. It is a very valuable thing, and it leads to creativity. Please take the headphones off. Okay. Intellectual property is rights and ideas. Whereas real property is rights in land. Personal property is rights in objects. Intellectual property is rights and ideas. Anybody know who the guy on my left is?
Yes.
Thomas Alva Edison. He was considered at the time one of the greatest inventors of all time. He was the Jeff Bezos. He was Elon Musk. He was all these great inventors holding the world. He invented so many things you can't even imagine. Motion pictures. It was him. Sound recording. It was him. The electric light bulb. It was him. He started as a tinkerer. He was a person who built an empire on ideas. He founded the General Electric Company, 15 miles away from here, Schenectady, New York. He was brilliant. Some of his proteges were also brilliant. One of the people that he groomed to go on to really transform America was none other than Henry Ford, who worked right in Schenectady here for him. He got a bunch of ideas from Edison and went out and built a huge car company. Really the first. Invented things like the assembly line, which transformed America and for the first time made cars affordable to the general public. He invented the airplane engine. He didn't invent the airplane, that was the Wright brothers, the bicycle builders, but he invented the first major airplane engine. Edison was brilliant, but even better than being an inventor, he was a magnificent businessman. Because he had a great mind for talent. You were a really smart engineer. You know what you do? Come to work for me. And sign this paper. All the intellectual property ideas that you come up with, I'll pay you a salary, but they're now mine. A lot of things that Edison invented, he really didn't invent. He had his employees invent, but he owned the property rights. Even today, General Electric Company, which has the largest R&D facility in the world, right here in Niskayuna, again, 14 miles away from here, that R&D facility comes out with more patents than any individual operation in the world. Frequently, it depends on the year, frequently, that one facility alone that he created has one third of the patents in the United States of America. Okay? That one facility. Everything you can think of in our modern world, a lot of it came out of that R&D facility. Magnetic resonance, the MRI machine, came right out of it. Anybody going to watch a football game tonight? You know the plastic they make for the helmet? Came out of that research facility. Okay? Plastic. The reason why this was made possible is because of intellectual property. Because people are willing to invest and create all kinds of ideas because of the fact that they can recoup money. I'll invest in research if I can get paid in the end, whether it be for pharmaceutical drugs, whether it be for medical technology, whether it be for computer technology, whether it be for automobiles or airplanes or kitchen appliances. Any of these things gets invested in because of the fact that you have intellectual property law. Who here has been to Disney World? Raise your hand. You know the guy on the right? Anybody tell me who he is?
Conrad.
Sorry? sorry?
Somebody to have confidence. All I remember is somebody to have confidence.
It is a writing of God. Very good. His name is Figment. As a figment of your imagination. Okay? Figment has a writing of God, as you were saying. And he tells about the wonders of intellectual property law. Sings a song, imagination. I won't say it for you because it's a filthy word. Okay? But it's all about ideas. If you have a great idea, you can really cash in on it. Man who worked for Ford Motor Company. He said, why do windshield wipers only have two speeds, high and low? We should have more. He invented the intermittent windshield wiper. You know how you turn your hand on it? Now you can have multiple speeds? Sounds like a simple invention. Make $36 million off of that idea. Never even made a prototype. A great idea, and most inventions, you ask Thomas Edison, necessity is the mother of invention. Think of a good idea to solve a problem, boom, you can cash in. Okay. There's three types of intellectual property, as we said. First is patents. It's ideas for products or processes. The second is trademarks. That's a logo. We'll get to that in a minute. And the third is copyrights. That is written or performed works. Copyrights protect your creativity, whether you do a movie or a book or a play or a dance. Trademarks identify your business.
Old Marches and McDonald's, the Colonel at KFC, the pen on your New Balance shoe. All of those things are logos, which are trademarks.
Okay. Let's talk about copyrights first, because they're the broadest area of intellectual property. It's enforceable rights in writings, art, or expression. There's key elements in order to prove your intellectual property in any of these three items: copyrights, patents, or trademarks. What are the key elements for copyright? First, it's got to be original. I can't copy somebody else's work and claim it to be mine. Why? I'm infringing their copyright. It's got to be original. I can't do a Snow White and Seven Dwarfs movie again while that copyright is on there. Okay? Disney took the copyright. It's got to be a work of authorship. It could be literary, where you write a book. It can be music. I write a song. I perform a song. It can be dramatic. I write the play Hamilton. That's got a copyright on it. Okay? It can be a combination of those things. It can be graphic. I paint an amazing painting. I take an amazing photograph. Okay? All of these things can be copyrighted. I design a building, architectural. I do a movie or an audio production. All of your podcasts. You guys listen to podcasts? Or books on this, they're all copywritten. Okay? Software is viewed as literary. Just note that was a big controversy
at the time that software was coming into prominence. In the early 1990s, there was a lot of litigation, as was court cases, lawsuits, over whether or not it was a patent or a copyright. Some people argue it's a patent because it's a process to develop the code. However, Bill Gates, another 21st century and 20th century inventor, said no. Code is writing. We write it, that your talent in writing and how you tweak it is what makes it a copyright. And lastly, after you do the other items and satisfy the other elements, it's got to be fixed. So when you write that great American novel, you got to put it down on paper. Okay? When you do that movie, it's got to be built. Okay? When you have that music, it's got to be either written or performed. You have to fix it. It can't remain in your brain alone. Okay? You have, why do you think fixation is so important? Okay? Yes.
It's objective. It's objective.
No, but the good answer
is proof.
Proof. Way to go. Exactly. Well, it's proof. Because while it's still in your mind, how does that proof it blows your skin? You have to demonstrate it by fixing it. Okay? It's got to be a physical rendering so you prove it to be there.
Okay. What is your right with a copyright? First, I can prevent reproduction.
If I write this great book and you write and take all my characters and write a new one, I can sue you and say, don't do that. That's my book. Okay? If I decide to write a book that has Indiana Jones go to New Jersey, probably a big seller, but okay. Steven Spielberg's going to come up to me and say, that's my character, you can't turn around and have him digging in Bayonne for archaeological constructs.
Okay? You can prevent what we call derivative works. That would be a derivative work. If I turned around and did another Star Wars, if I took all the characters, or did Indiana Jones, or any other character that's famous, okay? That's a derivative work. And as a result, you can prevent that if you have the original copy. It allows me to distribute copies of all my work. So if I am Steven Spielberg and I make the next great movie, I can flood the market with copies of it because it's my work, it's my right. And I can perform, display, and transmit the work publicly. Now, anybody bought a movie on Amazon lately? I'm sure you have, or on Netflix. There's a new trend. It used to be you buy that movie and you think you have it forever. When you buy a song or a movie or something on the internet, you would think that once you buy it, you don't have to buy it. But if you look at the agreements that you make with Amazon or Netflix, the modern trend is you're not buying it forever. They reserve the right to pull it down off their mainframe. So if you say, I want to watch that movie again because it's so good, you turn around, it may not be there. Why? Because they want to introduce the director's cut and make you pay for it again. So read the fine print when you go to buy one of these things. because you may, in fact, only be renting it even when they say buy. You can also rent it sometimes. They say rent, which means you're going to hold it down in 3 or 4 days. Okay? But even when you buy it, because of their right rent, which they get to do anything they want, it's their work, they can pull it down. So read the print. How long does a copyright last? Well, it depends when the work was produced. Why? Because in 1978, they changed the law. Okay? Now, you say 1978, that's a long time ago. No one here, except for maybe me, was even born then. But I can tell you that because copyrights last a long time, you've got to check on it. If the work was created before 1978, it lasts for the life of the author plus 70 years. No renewal. Okay? If it was created after 1978, it lasts for 28 years plus a renewal for 47 years. That's a total of 75, if you add it up. There is a work for hire exception. So if you're part of Disney's animation crew and you create a cartoon, it's one of two things. 95 years from the date of the publication, that's when the movie was released or the book was printed for distribution, or 120 years from creation. Okay? One or the other. Whichever is less. Okay? To prove infringement, hey, you've stolen my rights, you have to have a valid copyright. That means it has to be filed. You can't just say it's yours. It has to be filed. The defendant has to have copied or somehow violated your work. And the copy has to be an inappropriate appropriation. Now, if you buy that movie on Netflix and download it on your computer and then somehow remove the DRM, which is the code on it that prevents its duplication, and there is software to do that, if you do that and then sell it on the street corner, you have clearly violated somebody's copyright. And they can sue you and fine you. That's why when you pull up these movies, they have that FBI seal. Say, you know, it's kind of like the mattress tag. You're going to be put in prison for the rest of your life if you violate. Violating a copyright is not only a civil remedy, it's also a crime. Okay? Because you're stealing from someone. That's why the FBI logo comes out. If you have a valid copyright, you can prevent that. You can sue them. You can throw them into the FBI. Why is the FBI as opposed to like the state police in law? Because this is a federal statute. And the FBI enforces federal crimes. Okay? Now, those of you who go on my website might notice that there's some books you can download. Is Bob actually violating copyrights? You think I do that? There is an exception in the federal statute that allows for the distribution for educational purposes of segments of copywritten material. So I can provide, as long as I don't provide the whole thing, as long as I don't sell it, which I don't, I provide it for free, I am purposefully within the federal copyright law. If you look at those select readings, There's not a whole lot. Why is that? I want to get you the information, but I don't want to violate a copyright. Okay?
They have a defense. If it's a fair use, that is a fair use under the statute. I have not violated the copyright. Okay? Free speech also allows for some discussion on it. If I go around and say, you know, that Star Wars movie is the best movie I ever saw, am I violating their copyright?
No.
If I write a letter to the editor saying how much I'm sad that Harrison Ford is no longer in the movies,
does that violate the copyright?
No.
Okay?
Why? Because I have a free speech right for it, and I'm not reproducing the motion picture. Now, yes.
So, can they copyright, let's say, the general plot?
The general plot.
For instance, let's say that I want to take the general plot of Star Wars. Farm boy who is adopted by his aunt and uncle.
Yep.
Is convinced by an old sage to leave his home and save his country. He goes up and they have to destroy a city and take the Death Star, and his father ends up being
the question is that a derivative work?
It's a derivative of a lot of Greek mythology and also religious themes.
But guess so what? That will become a trial where there will be facts offered as to whether or not that's a derivative work. Federal judge will make that determination about whether or not your work is actually a derivative of the original. Okay? And if they find that there's that you basically copied it, and instead of Luke Skywalker, you have Sky Luke Walker, okay? You basically copy everything they do. You know, instead of having a Death Star, you have a rail gun on top of the moon. Maybe it's close enough, maybe it's not. Like you're saying, there are a lot of copying of other things. You brought up Greek mythology. Walt Disney was brilliant on this. Walt Disney never paid anything for copyrights. He made cartoons out of Grimm's fairy tales that were written hundreds of years ago. What no longer has a copyright? If it's written hundreds of years ago. And guess what he gets to put on his? A copyright. So if you take Snow White and Seven Dwarfs, possibly coming closer to the market. If you take it and copy it, he can sue you. Disney has one of the most aggressive legal departments in the United States. Why? Because Walt Disney was brilliant. He took non-copyrighted material, not non-copyrighted material, and turn it into copyright. Yes?
Does that mean he has technology copyrighted?
Well, here's the thing. If you take the Hercules movie, I'll give you an example because there's one coming out like any game. Robin Hood is a rather old story, right? If I make Robin Hood identical to the Robin Hood that came out with Kevin Costner, okay? Same exact characters, same exact settings, maybe different actors, they turn around to a different copyright infringement. Not from the original Robin Hood story, but the way they did it. So if you notice the new Robin Hood coming out, not like the Kevin Costner movie. Every Robin Hood is a little different. There's a broadcast television show on Grimm's Fairy Tales. OK? Okay? A lot of those things have been made over and over and over again. Just like Greek mythology that you mentioned. If they turn around and take Hercules, which is an old story after Greek mythology, if you turn around and make that unique to yours, okay, he has black hair, so blonde hair, and you know, he's running around, his girlfriend's name is different or something, you do something unique, then you have to violate the copyright of the last movie. Okay?
So you got to look at that and how it is. Okay? If you find that somebody violated your copyright, what are your remedies? You can sue them to stop. Stop violating my copyright. That's an equitable remedy because you're not asking for money yet. You're just saying stop doing it. That's an injunction. Stop doing it. You can impound it. So if they make the movie just like they made some other actor, and it's identical to that, like just like Robin Hood and Kevin Costner, guess what? They can impound all the new movies. They can put them in a vault, not release them. You can actually order the destruction of that new product. I don't want it out there. I don't want it knocked off. And lastly, here is the biggest bug that I've ever seen. You could put a saddle on it. Oh, yeah.
I don't really want to.
You can turn around and sue for damages. You're making $10 million off of my idea. I want the money. Okay. You guys had a question? Go.
What does like fan fiction mean to Sam?
What is what?
Fan fiction?
I don't know what that is.
It's like where
they call the character. I need to get out.
It's like if somebody calls a character in the movie or book or whatever and they write a story based on that.
What?
I would say that might be the written work in the very terrible.
Yeah, I think that's really good thing.
Now we have every movie these days seems to be out of a comic book. Okay? You have the Avengers, you have Iron Man, you have a whole bunch of these characters that were comic books when I was a little boy. Now they all combine them into one story. Avengers are a whole bunch, you know, Captain America's here, Green Lantern, okay? By the way, Green Lantern never kind of saw it. But I think that could be viewed as a derivative. Okay, so you got to be careful. Okay.
So let's say that you want to start, so you think I'm stealing your copyright.
Yep.
And you want to sue me for $10 million.
Yep.
I'm Walt Disney, you're a small cartoon company.
Yep.
I'm going to bury you in litigation for the next 5 years when I defend your copyright. In the meantime, my movie's going to go out, make tons of money, but by the time I'm done, I'm going to be repairing it.
There's a beautiful thing about most of these federal statutes. You know what it is?
What?
Under federal statutes for intellectual property, you get attorney's fees. So if you win, guess what? They not only have to pay you, award your equitable remedies, but, and if you make millions of dollars off this new money, that movie that I'm suing you on, guess what? You get all the work, I get all the money.
Alright.
And I don't have to pay my lawyer, unlike
right.
In most cases where you bury me in litigation, I have to pay for my own lawyer. And if I have to do that, I can't afford to keep up with Walt Disney.
Right, your lawyers are going to be self-funded very fine. They'll never
not
be
necessarily.
They'll never be able to win.
Not necessarily.
I don't know. Like, you think that any lawyer can go toe-to-toe with Walt Disney lawyers? GE's lawyers?
If you show that lawyer that you have a derivative work, and that Walt Disney Company is going to make $500 million off of it, you're going to have lawyers from here to New York City lined up to take that case. predicting this that they know they're going to get paid? Because Disney's paying the bill. Okay? Okay.
I don't know. What do you think, though? Is that an issue?
Not really.
Because of attorney's fees.
Defending intellectual property. How hard is it to defend intellectual property?
That's why you have lawyers. And intellectual property lawyers, my sister's one of them, make more money than any other kind of lawyer. Believe me. My sister works in Albany, New York, makes $750,000 a year. Okay? Okay. How do you obtain a copyright? This is the process, step by step. You basically create the work, file the copyright after you produce the item. Okay? Second item, patents. Unlike a copyright, a patent is a new or useful process, machine, manufacture, composition, or improvement to one or the other. Just like copyright, it has its elements. One, it's got to be patentable subject matter. Not everything is patentable. And the federal statute says what's not and what is. If I have a new chemical composition, I mentioned about the football pump, okay? Lexan, which is a plastic derivative, was created in this field in New York because a scientist was mixing polymers and didn't get them all done, all the elements she had to add before she had to go home for the night. She left it on the countertop, came back the next day, voila, you left this new incredible plastic. It was kind of by mistake. Okay? What do they patent in that? They show this is how you create it. You add X amount of this powder or Y amount of this powder, you stir it, you let it sit overnight, all of that goes into the patent. Let's say I say, you know what? I got this great idea for a new product. We're going to sell it coast to coast. It is two parts of hydrogen and one part of oxygen. Is that patentable? It's a formula. I came up with it. It's also naturally occurring. It's called water. Okay? It's got to be patentable. You have to demonstrate that it's unique, it's not obvious, and it's got utility. Obviously, water's got utility, but it's not a patentable subject matter, and it's certainly not novel, and it's certainly not non-obvious. What are the patentable subject matters? It's got to be a process. You could patent a process. If I mix these chemicals in a certain way over a certain time, that's patentable. If nobody else has figured out that you need to stir these chemicals for 16 hours at the speed of X centrifuge, and I figure that out, that's a process. And I can patent that. A machine. I build something, a widget, that nobody else has built. Or I take one that somebody else has built, like a windshield wiper, and say, I want to make it better. Instead of having two speeds really fast, I want to have to do it quickly. I can improve your process with a patent. I can take what you've done. So unlike a copyright, I basically do a derivative work. I can do that because I improve it. Now, one of the things that I got to be careful
the fact I'm doing a derivative work, making an intermittent windshield wiper, I got to make sure that I'm not violating the original windshield wiper patent. That better have expired, or I better have the right to improve the original product. Manufacture. I use new forms of the item. I use new quantities of the item. Or I combine it different. Okay? And lastly, a composition.
Instead of putting two parts of hydrogen and one part of oxygen, I add caffeine. I call it water joke. Came out in the 1980s, it was the worst tasting thing you ever had in your life. It didn't sell very well. Gave you a nice boost, but it was pretty yucky. You see water joe in the supermarket? No. That caffeine in the water bottle. Okay? I had a drive back in the morning this morning at 5 a.m. down to New York City and back. I was kind of tired, so I got caffeine gone. Never seen such an animal. It was pretty yucky, but it won't be. Not very well. Okay. The composition of the matter matters. Now, I got a question. General Electric Company, as you said, has the largest R&D center on planet Earth, right close to you. In the late 1970s, early 1980s, they were worried about oil spills. There's a number of big oil spills. How do we address them? One of their whiz-bang scientists, and they have people who just think stuff up, said, I have an idea. We're going to genetically engineer microorganism that likes to eat oil. Okay? They took a bunch of amoebas, genetically engineered them so that it would eat oil and excrete non-hazardous materials after eating. Okay? Their idea was they were going to drop all these microorganisms down on the oils. Well, it would eat it all up and the oil spilled. Wash away the ocean. Their competitors, who didn't like GE, said, that's life. You can't get a patent on life. You're going to be genetically engineering. It went to the Supreme Court of the United States. Who here thinks that they got the patent? Raise your hand. Who thinks they did? Guess what? They did. Because what they got the patent on was the genetic engineering. Their process of taking that microorganism and changing it through that process, the Supreme Court found, was patentable. The item itself, the life itself, certainly was not patentable. But the process by which you created that was. It is kind of a distinction without a difference. Because you don't get that new organism without doing the genetic engineering. And they said the genetic engineering process is patentable. So if somebody else tried to create the same microorganism, guess what? They could stop you from doing it. At the end of the day, guess what? It didn't really work. That's why you don't see these huge airplanes dumping these microbes on, because apparently they created in advance what they call red tides, which are very powerful for wildlife and people and everything.
But somebody had a question. Yes.
So if it didn't work, and the amoeba is procreated, what would happen with the next generation of that living organism?
GE was smart people. They made them in such a manner that they could not reproduce themselves. Because if they reproduced themselves,
what good would their patent be? Because you just scoop up a whole bunch of them, get them to reproduce themselves, and just drop them. What they said is the only way you're going to get that amoeba is if you go through this process to make the amoeba itself. Those two amoebas came together and didn't get to do a third. I don't understand how that happened.
Did you represent GE in that case?
I did not. I used to be a lawyer for General Electric Company, but when I was a lawyer for GE, I represented them on power plant issues. So I come from Schenectady, and that's what we did, is build power plants. So I can tell you all about nuclear power generation,
which is a scary thought that they put me anywhere near that. But anyway, yes.
Are patents valid?
Yes, and we'll get to that in a second. They can be, and we'll talk about that in a second. In addition to what is a patentable subject area, you also have to have utility. I can't patent something that doesn't do anything. It's got to have utility to society. It's got to provide an actual benefit. It's got to be novel. If everybody else was working on this, I can't turn around and get a patent on a water wheel that everybody's built since the end of time. If I improve a new flywheel that works on water, that's more efficient than anybody else, I can probably get a patent on that. But if I just turn around and build a water wheel the same way that people have been doing them for generations, guess what? I can't get. Non-obvious. There's a lot of things in life that we know and have known for generations. You have a great grandmother who makes great cake. Okay? Her grandmother made it. 800 grandmothers in that county are making it. As a result of that, everybody pretty much knows it may be an awesome cake, but it's pretty obvious. So as a result of that, you're not going to get a patent on that. Okay. What are your rights? Similar to the issue on copyrights, you have a right to prevent others from making, using, or selling your invention. A patent, just like a copyright, is a federal right. It's not directly transferable outside the U.S. without a treaty. That's your answer. A lot of other governments have treaties with us where they will enforce our copyrights. One of the countries that doesn't have a broad-based treaty with us is China, and it's purposeful. They don't want us blocking what they reverse engineer. The president and his trade representatives have been talking with them. We may get a treaty. We'll see. At the end of the day, we have to look. There's other countries, China's not alone, that have decided it's not in their best interest, and every country goes by what's in their best interest. You cannot enforce your copyright in a foreign country unless they have a treaty saying they'll enforce it. And they don't have to do a treaty with the United States if they don't want to. It's only enforceable any place in the United States, but if you have, most countries want to have their intellectual property rights respected in the United States. Germany, for example. When Germany sells a Mercedes-Benz, a Mercedes-Benz or BMW has a really cool option on it, they don't want Ford offering that option. So they negotiate a treaty with the United States saying, we'll respect your copyrights, we'll respect your patents, we'll respect your trademarks, and you do ours. It's reciprocal. Okay? Now, the
Not only does China not respect ours, because they're on the treaty, we don't respect theirs. So it's a two-way street, because we don't have a treaty to defend. I think we're going to end up getting a treaty. We'll see.
Okay. You must file the patent in every nation when they have a treaty with you in which you wish to protect it. If you file it with the EU, by the way, it's good for all the European countries. How long is, and in the United States, you file it with the Patent and Trademark Office in the United States. There's a maintenance fee every year you have to pay to keep that patent alive. What happens if you don't pay the fee? The patent goes bye-bye. So better make sure you write that check to Washington to keep your patent alive. And it's 20 years from the date the patent is filed. After the 20 years, patents are gone. Not like the copyright, if you go for 120 years for the works of employees, here it goes for 20 years. After the 20 years, the patent's off. So you often hear this with drugs, with medications. After that's done, it's gone. Somebody else can make it and then charge you for a lot less price. Okay? The process of obtaining a patent is similar to that of a copyright, but you have to get approval. With a copyright, you basically just file it. Okay? If you're doing a derivative work or doing something that infringes on somebody else, the copyright filing is not checked over. They let the people who want to enforce their copyrights, if you write a derivative work and then copyright, they basically say the person who wrote the original, it's up to you to sue. Not true with patents. With patents, you have to get it approved by the Patent and Trademark Office. You have to do a patent application, and it's got to be approved by the Patent and Trademark Office. A patent application in the United States generally costs about $20,000. It's a lot of legal work, so if you have the next great idea, you better make sure that it's going to make you more than $20,000. Because that's how much you're going to have to pay just to get the application approved. Minimum. Okay? Really, you can only do it through hiring an attorney. That's one of the reasons why intellectual property lawyers make so much money. Okay? Lastly, trademarks.
Wearing a shoe and it has a trademark on it.
Just one shoe?
He's got two. And I think I see four trademarks. Much footwear, you have it too. You have Adidas, he has Nike's. New Balance has a big in there. Okay? Shoes, sneakers, they got trademarks. A lot of markup on shoes, they want to have. Your hat. You have your underarms and you have your hat, right? That is a trademark. I don't know if the California thing is here. Trademarks are a logo. The golden arches, the symbol of McDonald's, fast food restaurants are big on there. That trademark identifies it. Your computer with the Apple with the white eye on it is a trademark. The HP symbol, trademark. All of these things identify a product.
It's an enforceable right in a word or a phrase. McDonald's used to have a slogan, "You deserve a break today."
That was McDonald's
slogan. Okay? That was trademarked. Nobody else could use that phrase to describe their restaurant. Okay? Unlike a patent that has to be functional, a trademark has to be non-functional. It doesn't do anything other than identify the product. It's also got to be first in use, and it's got to be distinctive. If it meets all those things, you can file it for 10 years and renew it forever.
McDonald's was started in the late 1950s by the McDonald's brothers. Really good movie called The Founder that talks about it, how Ray Kroc franchised them. But the Golden Arches have been around since the 50s. That's longer than I've been alive. And as a result of that, because every 10 years, McDonald's renews their trademark, guess what? It's good. And if somebody else tries to take the Golden Arches, they can sue them. With a copyright, you have to put on the item a C surrounded with a circle by it. With a trademark, it's an R with a circle around it. That R says it's a registered trademark, and you register it with the Patent and Trademark Office in Washington, D.C. Cisco Systems, it's a computer company. They have that little logo of the Golden Gate Bridge. The name is trademarked. See the little R next to it? Shows that it's a registered trademark. That slogan, empowering the internet generation, is a slogan that's trademarked. The name of Cisco Systems is a name that's trademarked. How do you trademark something? You select or design the appropriate mark. You perform a trademark search, which is similar to a patent application. What you do is you go to the Patent and Trademark Office in Washington, D.C., and you say, does anybody else have that Golden Arches? Does anybody else have that slogan? Does anybody else have that design? And if the Patent and Trademark Office says no, you pay your fee and you can create your trademark. That is the Patent and Trademark Office, beautiful building in Washington, D.C. In order to practice before it as a patent or trademark intellectual property lawyer, you have to take a separate bar. Not every lawyer is entitled to take that bar. They have requirements where you have to have an undergraduate degree in either a hard science, physics, chemistry, engineering, certain computer sciences. You cannot even sit for that bar without that background. So not all lawyers are eligible to take the bar, and that bar has a 3% passage rate, unlike the New York State Bar, which has got one of the mid-level passage rates of 68%. Okay? It's a very difficult bar, and interestingly enough, you do not have to be a lawyer to take that bar. You can be a former clerk at the Patent and Trademark Office. But they make an exception that they can also take the patent bar. Okay. We talked about the reverse engineering with China. The United States also does it with countries that we don't have a treaty with. Goes both ways. Big issues, as we said today, with music and software and processes. Who are the biggest players in intellectual property?
Number one, General Electric. It's why we talked about them so much.
General Electric produces more patents than in all other businesses in the United States combined. Okay? Depends on the year. As I said frequently, that one site, and it's not their only site, that one site out in this unit,
one third of all the patents in the United States combined. Okay? Disney is a huge player in intellectual property.
They're a big motion picture company, and motion picture companies are really aggressive on copyrights.
It's easy to steal their stuff. They tend to be big conglomerates. They tend also to own music companies.
And as a result, if you try to take their items and not pay for it, they will go after you. In the 1990s, there was a very famous case called Napster. In the early 1990s, there was a platform on the early internet where I had a bunch of MP3 files. I took all the records that I had in the file. There was a conversion process using file, and I made MP3s of all my vinyl records. With Napster, if you posted those on this platform, you could share them with other people. You had a whole bunch of them. You had a whole bunch of them. I didn't know who you were. You didn't know who I was. But you saw that I had some Jimmy Buffett files. You saw that I had some Paul Simon files. You're a fan of them and saying, I'll tell you what, you can download my, who's this guy's? Who's your fan? News. You say, I got these files, and I'll trade them for your files on your book. Okay? I doubt it too. You can come out of the book. Okay. You could download that. There was a cost to download the software for the what was called file sharing. The music industry brought a suit against Napster. It went to the Supreme Court of the United States. Napster argued, I'm not selling this stuff. I'm not knocking it off and selling it. I'm saying, you're my friend. You're giving me yours, I'm giving you mine. What you do with it is up to you. They argued that that was not an infringement of copyright. The music industry said, it absolutely is. You are turning around and getting music files you did not pay for. The Supreme Court of the United States sided with the music industry. One of the reasons in the court decision of the Supreme Court of the United States was the fact that they said the music industry could well go out of business because of file sharing. Is that true? I have no idea. I have the joy of litigating against the guy who was the lawyer for Napster. Sadly, he was 0-2 after the litigation. He lost that case, lost my case too. Napster reformatted. They then turned around and went with what Apple became the model, where they charge you a buck a song. And that's generally what Apple does today. Napster was the first platform. When Apple took it over, it had a huge library, a lot bigger than file sharing. They turned around and ate Napster's lunch. Who here belongs to Napster? None of them. But who here belongs to Apple Music? I bet you most of them. Okay? So, the market kind of took care of it,
But one of the reasons why the Supreme Court in its dicta said if you charge a nominal fee per song, they knew if you charge too much, nobody uses it. That's why that buck a song, because I'll get a whole album and I only pay a buck a song. Pay a buck per song. If I had paid $20 for the song, you would buy it. You price it right, and you can do it. Okay? Okay.
Any questions? Yes. Go back here first, and then I'll come to you. Gabby. You got to speak up, honey, because I'm deaf. With a patent and what?
No, because here's the thing. They don't go together. Because a trademark inherently is non-useful. Just an identification. A patent, in order to get the patent, has to do something. A trademark in itself cannot do it. Now, give me an example. Kentucky Fried Chicken. Okay? Tell I haven't that Kentucky Fried Chicken has the Colonel as its trademark. Right? You have a picture of this white-haired guy who started Kentucky Fried Chicken on his first Social Security check. That is a trademark. How they make their chicken, they think they're looking good, that's the trademark. But how they make it, that can be patented. Okay? So you can have more than one intellectual property right, but at the end of the day, they're different. Yes.
I don't understand the Supreme Court's rationale in the music industry if you want business.
That's what they said.
Doesn't make sense at all.
I think that was one of the arguments that Napster said.
Because
Napster argued just the opposite, saying
this is going to encourage more people to listen to music, you're going to make it more available. And the Supreme Court of the United States said no, because instead of buying new content, they're going to download content from other people who are
let's assume that. The music industry did go out of business.
Yep.
Like, they were losing money.
Yep.
And then less music was being produced.
One of the reasons you have intellectual property rights is to encourage people to be creative. And there's an investment in that creativity. If I want to encourage somebody to write that great American novel, then you're going to work really hard on it. You're only going to work really hard on it if you know when it hits the bookstore that it's going to sell a lot of copies and that you're going to get the money from it. The Supreme Court, the Napster case, turned around and said, if you do not allow the support of the music industry by buying their product rather than sharing their product, they're not going to invest in new bands. They're not going to produce as much content. That was their argument. Is it persuasive? That's up to all of us to decide. Okay? But they said it will.
Okay. Let's switch gears. So far, we have covered our course overview, our history of American law, the law of property, which was an introduction of terms, ownership, transfers, and gifts, which was, in addition, the postulates, the law of property, personal property relating to liens, bailments, and gifts, and lastly, we just did intellectual property, and now we go into criminal law. That's what's on your midterm. The common law felonies are important. Criminal law, just like property law, is 99% state law. There are federal criminal laws, but not many of them. Most criminal law is state law.
and it comes out of common law. The common law felonies have one thing in common. If you committed them, the state could make you pay your life. They were all what we call a capital offense. That means you would get the death penalty.
We'll talk about what they were and what they are. Now, criminal law is broken down into two areas.
What we call substantive criminal law, that's crimes, murder, rape, burglary. Those are all crimes. There's also what we call criminal procedure. That's how you prosecute a crime. There's certain rules that they say that the state has to follow if they charge you with a crime. Those rules are called criminal procedure. You're entitled under the Constitution to a lot of rules if you get charged with a crime. We have to give you a speedy trial. We have to provide you with an attorney if you cannot afford one. You're offered the presumption of innocence. If a prosecutor prosecutes you, they have to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. That is criminal procedure. It doesn't matter whether you're charged with a misdemeanor or a felony. Those rules are in place for everything. Any crime. Now, some things you might think are a crime are not a crime. If you get a traffic ticket, that is not a crime. It's a violation of the vehicle traffic law. Now, if you run somebody down in the street, that's a crime. Okay? Administrative regulations, if you violate them, they're not necessarily a crime.
You don't get those same criminal procedure protections for non-crimes. They're only for crimes. So it's a two-step dance. You have substantive criminal law, that's the crimes, and you have the criminal procedure, how the state has to prove the crimes and what they get to do to punish you.
They cannot turn around and have cruel and unusual punishment. Now, I got a question for you. Does New York State have a death penalty? Anybody know the answer? Yes, it does. But the Court of Appeals, the state of New York, state's highest court, or the other leader, ruled it is unconstitutional. A death penalty statute requires the New York State two juries. One, to prove whether you are innocent, to determine whether you're innocent or guilty, and the second, to determine whether or not they ought to give the death penalty. The death penalty in New York State is a limited death penalty. Cannot get it for all murders. There's only certain murders that are eligible for death penalty in New York. You tell a police officer, a correction officer, an act of terrorism, act of torture, torture your victim before you kill them. Those the types of things are eligible for the death penalty. There's actually 12 of them, but they're pretty serious. It's not just the standard everyday murder, okay? Murder for hire, death penalty. The problem is on criminal procedure basis, the Court of Appeals said that second jury construct to determine whether or not you get the death penalty did not pass constitutional muster. So even though you will open the criminal procedure law in New York State and find a death penalty, and open the penal law and see those crimes are eligible for the death penalty, until the legislature determines in its wisdom that they will fix the death penalty on the books to make it constitutional with what the Court of Appeals said, no one in New York State will get the death penalty. No one in New York State has gotten the death penalty since 1962. That's the last time it happened. Okay? Okay.
As we said, the criminal law is a product of common law. All of these crimes came out of common law. Crime is not a new phenomenon to the human experience, Sam. We've had it for a long time. How we treat it, how we convict people is different. But the crimes have been there. What is the purpose of the criminal law? Two things. One, inflict punishment on those who have done harm, and threaten punishment on people who might do harm. One is specific specific deterrence. The other one is general deterrence. Specific deterrence says, we're going to punish you so you won't do it again. General deterrence is, we're going to punish you so you won't do the crime. You're going to look how we got punished. That's the two principles. One, prevent the guy who did it from doing it again. Secondly, prevent others from doing it in the first place. What do you do? Why do we have the criminal law? To prevent physical harm or death or injury to human beings? To prevent the loss or damage of property? To preserve morality for society? To protect against danger to government or our social institutions like our churches and our schools? To keep the public peace and to prevent injury from public health. Like we said, most crimes are also have civil remedies. In order to prove a crime, I have to convict you by a reason, beyond a reasonable doubt. In order to sue you for a tort, I only have to go to more likely than not standard of preponderance of the evidence, more than a 50% chance. That doesn't pass the muster for a criminal conviction. So if I hit you in the face, you can put me in jail for assault and battery. You can also sue me for that tort and collect money for that. You only have to prove that for a tort, that it was more likely than not that I did it. In a criminal trial, you have to say beyond a reasonable doubt. There are different standards. Because one, you have your life and liberty at stake. The other, only money. Okay? There's five theories of punishment. First is retribution. You did something, we're going to get even for you. It's the old Hammurabi code, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. If you do something, we're going to get even for you, we're going to punish you. The second is deterrence. By punishing you, we're going to provide specific deterrence. We're going to throw you in jail so you can't do it to other people while you're in jail. That's specific deterrence. We're going to throw you in jail to make sure that you're in the case of others that they won't do it. That's general deterrence. That's another reason why we have punishment. Restraint is part of that as well. If you're in jail, you can't be committing crimes on people out of the jail. It's incapacitation. The fourth, sadly, really doesn't happen much. It should, but under our current system, it really doesn't. Sadly, today, we kind of warehouse prisoners. But that wasn't always the intent. One of the purposes of the criminal law is rehabilitation. They can go to prison, and hopefully we'll see the errors in ways, and correct your life. For those of you who think that that is never the intent, I might point you to the word penitentiary. It's a place where you do
dependence. Dependence, by its very nature, is rehabilitation. You can reflect back on what you've done and then try to make yourself better. There's a lot of discussion on criminal justice reform, and it all comes with these last two items.
One is rehabilitation, and the last one is restoration. Restoration is where the person who does the crime makes up to it to the victim. The criminal procedure law, as well as the penal law, allows for, in addition to someone convicted of the crime, to actually have the judge at the time of convicting the crime to levy a fine in the amount of the damage to the victim. One of the problems with that, it's almost always done, but most criminals are what we call judgment proof. They're not walking around with huge bags of cash, so there's not much to give to the victim. They don't have any money. Now, sometimes they do. When you're a huge drug lord, you have piles of cash. Guess what? If you do something bad to someone, you can turn around and have that money go over. Okay? But it's rare.
Restoration is a very valuable thing. We ought to try and do those last two. Sadly, we have more work to do.
Okay. There are two types and two levels of crimes: felonies and misdemeanors.
Violations are not crimes. Okay? A felony at common law meant we could kill you as a society. It's a capital offense. We're going to talk about the common law felony. It's limited in number. A misdemeanor was every other crime. Today it has a different meaning. A felony today is a crime in which you can be sentenced to more than 1 year in prison. Okay? 1 year in prison or more is a felony. A misdemeanor is less than a year. Common law, it was death. And everything else. Okay?
Okay. Common law felonies, what are they?
You like the picture? Drew it myself? I know, I'm not a felon. It's not copyrighted, it's just a question. At the end of the day, think of, I like acronyms, I'll show you one. Okay? And frequently I put one. Okay? I'll show you. Mr. and Mrs. Lamb. Mr. and Mrs. Lamb are the common law felonies. They are as follows: murder, rape, manslaughter, robbery, sodomy, larceny, arson, mayhem, and burglary. Let's go through them quickly. You already know from watching Law and Order what most of these things are. Murder is the intentional killing of a human being. So if I kill a dog, it's not murder. If I shoot my neighbor's cow, it's not murder. It's got to be the intentional killing, not accidental, not by mistake. It's the intentional killing of a human being with malice aforethought. That means I'm thinking about killing that person before I kill them. That is what it is. Now, the above definition is what the New York State Penal Law says.
What do they add? They have a depraved indifference to human life. They also have something called felony murder.
Felony murder under New York's death penalty gets the death penalty. What is felony murder? I go break into your house.
I don't know that you're even there. Okay? And I have a partner who breaks in with me. I steal your big deep screen TV and head out to the car. You wake up and surprise my partner who goes into the house with me. He doesn't want to leave any witnesses. I'm out the car. He killed you. I'm guilty of murder. How's that? I didn't want to kill him. I've never killed anybody. I didn't want to kill anybody. Yes, I didn't want to commit that felony, the burglar. Under felony murder, if I commit a felony and a person dies in the course of that felony, even if I don't kill them, you're guilty of murder. It's called felony murder. It's to prevent people from committing felonies. Felony murder under our death penalty and under most states' death penalty is a capital offense. Okay? Again, no capital offenses in New York State, but if it was, they did. Okay. Rape. Rape is sexual intercourse by forcible compulsion. The person does not agree. It does not have to be a man with a woman. It can be either one. I was in a county court about 10 years ago. Sitting in the front row was an absolutely strikingly beautiful young lady who looked angrier than any human being I've ever seen in my life. I figured she was mad because she got a bad opinion. That's what I was there for, but 99% of the people were there for me. I was there for fun. So, I was talking to the district attorney. I said, why is that young lady so angry? And I mean, she was like a movie star. He turned to me and says, well, she's rather angry because she's been accused of rape. She raped another woman. Is that possible? Yes, it is. Because you can rape someone with an instrumentality. I don't want to get graphic or gross, but a woman can rape another woman, a man can rape another man, a man can certainly rape another woman, and a woman can rape a man. It's sexual intercourse by forcible compulsion. Forcible compulsion can also lead under a rape statute if someone is physically helpless. If you're in a coma and someone has sexual relations with you, that is rape. Under New York State law, if you're under 16 years of age, you have no ability to consent. Male or female, that is rape. It's called statutory rape. Okay? Now, like many felonies, there's what we call degrees. If you rape a child, it's a higher penalty than if you rape someone who's of age. Society has said all rape is bad, but obviously it's worse to rape a 3-year-old than it is to rape a 30-year-old. That doesn't say it's good to rape a 30-year-old. Don't get me wrong. It's horrific. But at the end of the day, there's a higher level of crime on them. Okay? Rape is generally what we call a B felony. That is 15 to 25 years in jail. Long time. Manslaughter. Manslaughter is where a human being dies when the person who causes that death intends not to kill them, but to cause serious physical injury, or they intend to kill somebody else and kill you instead. So, I come home, I'm
crazed. I find my bride in a compromising position. I don't like that. I get out a gun. If I did, I shoot her and her boyfriend. I didn't think about it. It wasn't with intent. So it's not murder. It's manslaughter. I'm on the street. I see a person I absolutely hate. I look out a gun. I decide I'm going to murder that person. But I'm allowed to be shot and don't kill them. I kill somebody else on the street because I don't shoot them well. That is manslaughter. Okay?
Not murder. Now, you could argue it might be felony murder, but if you intend to kill another person, generally it's viewed as manslaughter. Robbery. Robbery is forcible stealing. If I take your computer when you're out of the room, and you don't know I take it, you're not there, I don't force you to give it to me, that's larceny. But if I come up, punch you in the face, knock you to the ground, and then steal your computer, that's robbery. It's forcible stealing. Okay?
Sodomy. Sodomy is no longer a crime of crime in New York State. It was a crime of common law. It's still a crime. It's just been reclassified. Sodomy today is what we call sexual assault in the first degree. Okay? It's still an assault. I don't really get into what exactly it is. You can read it yourself. I'm not here for that kind of education. But anyway. Larceny. Larceny is when I steal something from you, but don't force you to give it to me. I either trick you, or you don't know that I've taken it. That's larceny. Okay? There's lots of ways to steal things. You could do it by trick. You could do it by the fact the person's not around. You can do it by taking it when they're not aware. Okay? Arson. Traditionally, arson is burning down a building. But New York State has expanded that definition. New York State, it also calls for burning up a car or blowing something up. So if I cause an explosion, even though I don't catch it on fire, that is arson in New York State as well. But traditionally, it's burning down a building. Mayhem. Mayhem tells the tale of why these crimes, these common law felonies, get the death penalty. These crimes get the death penalty because of the fact that they're crimes not just against other people, they're crimes against the state. They're crimes against society. And mayhem is the perfect illustration. The common law definition of mayhem is the intentional disfigurement of any part of the male body, only in common law, men, useful in time of war. It's a crime not against that person, it's a crime against the state that you can no longer be used as a soldier, as a sailor. So if I cut off your arm, that's mayhem. If I cut off your ear, it's still here. It's not. Why? Because it's still here. Mayhem is a crime against the state. Today, it's obviously a crime against the person as well. When we talk about our case tonight, we'll talk about mayhem, because that could end up have been a charge. Okay, almost there, Mr. and Mrs. Lamb. Burglary. Burglary is when a person enters or remains unlawfully in a dwelling. Common law, have in your house. Today, he doesn't. It's any building, any structure. With the intent to commit a crime within. Now, if I go to your house for a party and hide in the closet, I'm invited to the party. But when everybody goes home, I'm in the closet. Because I really love that sweet big screen TV and I want to make it work. I have committed burglary. Why? Because I've unlawfully remained in the house. Common law added an additional requirement. It doesn't exist today. Common law, not only did it have to be a dwelling, it had to be at night. Breaking into somebody's house in the daytime was not burglary in common law. Breaking into somebody's house at night when they're vulnerable and presumably sleeping, before they had electric lights, before they had alarm systems, was burglar. Okay? Okay. Take a 2-minute break. We'll come back and do our...